Hello and welcome to the Metal Hammer podcast episode 81. I am Elle and I am here with Al.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm better than good, actually. I'm super hyped because this week we have launched our new issue and Baby Metal are on the cover.
Oh my God.
Baby Metal. And they are... floating through their new Metal Galaxy. That's obviously the name of their new record. We're talking about all about the new album Metal Galaxy, life after Yui Metal, and generally just world domination and what they're going to do next. Really interesting chat with them and Cobra Metal, their manager, all about what's next in the Baby Metal plan. Also, it comes with an exclusive patch. It's an amazing patch. It looks a bit black metal. It's basically the Fox God in corpse paint. Can't get more metal than that. And an art print of the Fox God as a constellation in the Metal Galaxy. It's so Baby Metal. So go and pick that up. What else is in the issue, Alice?
Well, we have Korn talking about their new album, The Nothing. There's a Steel Panther pub quiz, which is super exciting. We also have Cult of Luna, Opeth, Visceral Disgorge, top 25 power metal albums, Motorhead, Slipknot, Cradle of Filth, North Lane, Baroness, Soundgarden, Azogram, Chelsea Wolf, Bloodstock, Wacken Open Air, Arctangent, Midgard's Blot, and loads of other stuff.
It's literally bursting with metal, all the metal. That's our new issue out this week with Baby Metal on the cover, Baby Metal patch, Baby Metal art print, and a ton of other awesome metal bands. You can get it in shops now or go to tinyurl.com/buyhammer. That's tinyurl.com/buyhammer, and it's issue 327 with Baby Metal on it.
Yep.
Fucking Baby Metal. They are back. What else has been going on?
Lots of things. Lots.
Tell me, Alice. Tell me the things. You went to watch a band.
I did. I went to see a band called... Wait there. I have to think about how you say it because I did look it up and now it's gone from my mind. It's like... Ouija Dode, I think you have to
is
say.
It? Yeah. In my head, it's always Ouija Dude.
I know, but I don't think that's right. That's true. I think it's like Dode or something at the end. It's not Dude.
Where are they from?
Belgium.
Cool.
Yeah, so I went to see them and I've reviewed them for the issue coming out next that okay. We're working on.
Give us a little primer.
So they played all three of their albums back to back. So they have three albums in true black metal style. They've done a trilogy, which often a lot of black metal bands do. So they all just follow on from one another. I'm not going to try and say the name of the album.
Oh, please do.
I can't even remember. Like, it's not in my language, aka English.
I feel like you could try harder here. Definitely feel like you'd get a zero in the school test.
So, yeah, they played them back to back. They're very long songs, but they don't have many songs on the album, which is quite, like, droney, really. I mean, it's not a very black metal thing to do. Black metal songs are usually shorter than 10 minutes. But... yeah, they've got these really long songs, kind of like Sun or, well, Amun-Ra.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the members is in Amun-Ra. So they've got this kind of like...
Yeah, because aren't they part of the Church of Ra?
Yeah, they are.
Which is the collective that Amun-Ra kind of loosely set up, a group of bands from Belgium that all adhere to similar values.
Yeah, and two of the members are in Oathbreaker, who are also in Church of Ra.
Yeah.
So, so they're all in that kind of scene and they're quite atmospheric, quite like, they're not just sort of straight black metal. They're not as fast as most black metal bands. They're a lot slower. They've got a lot of atmospherics, as I said, in there. And you know, they're almost like verging on the post black metal, except that they're not. It's kind of like, they haven't gone that far. They haven't like strayed that far yet, but you can kind of like see that maybe they'd have a tendency to go a little bit further and push it a bit further away from black metal. But they're really, really good albums. But like 2 hours of them, it was a bit like, I don't know.
Do they have any breaks or is it straight through? Straight through.
They do not talk to the crowd. It's almost like, you know, like those really cool, like too cool for you indie bands that just stand there like, yeah, I'm just going to play. And they don't say it, but you know, that's what's going to happen. It was kind of like that. And it just kind of got a bit like, just, you know, like just put on some costumes and like, you know, get to this front of the stage and like, you know.
So you kind of felt like there wasn't quite enough showmanship for you for a 3-album show. Felt like it could have been a little bit more special maybe.
It was too like indie, too artsy, but not artsy enough, if you get me. It was like, we're too cool to do anything else. This is like stripped back, but we're like, yeah, there's nothing to watch, which kind of, I think, you know, you need to put in a little bit more if you're going to do like 2 full hours of a set. Mm. Like it would have been fine if it was like, you know, Dimmu Borgir or like, I don't know, like Walter Mass. They're fucking amazing live. But yeah, someone that had more of a show to them would be fine for 2 hours of black metal. But yeah, I like my black metal satanic and full of show stuff.
So like for you, it was too, almost just too focused. What? Just carry on. I'm interrupting you and you're carrying on with this litany of gory horrors that you want to see from this poor band who were just playing their music and probably playing it quite well across a grueling 2-hour show.
But it was 2 full hours with no chat or anything, you know? So it was quite like long going, especially when you're not drinking, you know, when you're not like getting drunk. So
all a bit much for you, but good show, but just could have had more of a show basically.
Yeah Or just, you know, had little breaks, something like that. I don't know, it was just, yes, you know, it's a lot, like 2 hours of one band anyway, like any band is like, especially if you're not like 18 and really drunk, it just feels like, oh, I've been standing here for in ages now.
I think it depends on the variation of the music. If you're watching a band where the music's quite varied, you're really into it, you almost don't notice the passage of time. But if it's something where it's kind of a similar sound for a lot of the songs or
like you
vibe.
Could definitely hear the evolution of their music, but which was quite interesting, and you could see like when they kicked into a new album, it's kind of like the energy picked up, because maybe the first songs of each album have the most energy of the albums. I don't know. But I think people kind of really got into it then. And by the 3rd album, I think more people were drunk and you could see people just kind of like picking up the energy because it had been a little bit like slow. Maybe they got a bit drunk then and they were like, yeah, come on, let's like, you know, start proper, you know, going crazy. And but it's not quite the sort of black metal that you can really go crazy to. So, yeah.
Well, talking of Blood and Bones, we both went to a really interesting event last week.
Yeah,
we went to a very special Metal Hammer hosted Lacuna Coil playback at the London Dungeon. First of all, we got a tour around the London Dungeon, which was super, super cool. And then I did a Q&A with Andrea and Christina. And then we had a playback of Black Anima, which is their 9th album coming out very soon. And it was a really crazy night, wasn't it? It was Christina and Andrea actually dressed up as plague doctors to scare people doing the dungeon tours. And even though I knew they were going to be there and I was trying to stay at the back of the crowd so I wouldn't get scared by them, and because I knew we had a photographer who was going to capture it, I didn't want to be in the pictures, so I was like standing in the back of the crowd, but still when they moved I literally screamed. It was so funny. They're actually really good at scaring people and look surprisingly natural in plague doctor outfits, these big capes and masks. And the dungeon was pretty cool as well. I'd never been there. Was it your first time as well?
Yeah, I'd never been there.
And they genuinely had some scary moments. It's where, you know, they turn all the lights off and the actors come up to you and try and make you jump and scare you. And they had a bit about the plague, and they had a bit of like a Jack the Ripper pub where they're talking about the Ripper victims, and a Mrs. Lovett's pies section. Where
yeah, a bit like folktale-y, wasn't it then? Like, it, yeah. Sweeney Todd as well.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. It was like all the kind of London legends of slaughter and murder and villainry. But it was really cool. It definitely had a lot of jump scares.
Yeah.
Were you actually scared at any point?
No.
Too hard-hearted. But that was great. And then, yeah, I had a chat with them about Black Anima, and you can read all about that in an upcoming issue of Metal Hammer. And they were quite open about it in front of the fans, and they sort of talked a little bit about the making of it and how they basically started off making a collage of art and other dark imagery that meant stuff to them, and the album's quite a lot about loss, and they kind of went into that side of things. And then we heard the record, which you guys will hear very soon, which sort of reminds me a bit of Comal Eyes in the sense that it's sort of a return to that really sort of melancholic vibe, but it also sounds modern. It sounds like it was made in 2019, and Andrea's doing a lot more screamy again, like on Delirium. And you know, they've both kind of written these lyrics that are pretty full on, really. So it's quite a hard listen, but I'm really into it. What about you, Alice? Did you hear it?
I'm not a massive Lacuna Coil fan personally. So I can't really...
You can make a gauge on whether or not you thought it was kind of...
Well, no, I haven't listened to the whole thing, and I can't really say anything.
I was totally into it.
critical about it. I couldn't compare it to the Lacuna Coil stuff, or it's just not really my cup of tea.
It's not black metal, but it was great. It was a really fun night and just a huge celebration, really, because that band did their 20th anniversary show. It was the 119 show in London last year, and they made a DVD of it, and they kind of had this whole evolution, and that was sort of a culmination of it and a big celebration of where they've been. And this record really feels like a band who are comfortable with their legacy and who they are and moving forward. So yeah, it's just a really fun night of scares and music and bloody things. I had a great time actually just handling all the entrails just around London Dungeon. They just had like up at these random places that have entrails hanging on the wall.
Yeah,
just love a bit of like entrails, skeletons. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
It was cool.
Yeah. And then that same day on Friday, what was in the news, Alice? Go on, tell us the big news story of the week.
Well, Tool have pushed Taylor Swift off number one on the Billboard 200 charts.
Massive news. They're the charts in the US, in case you don't know. So Taylor Swift, we all know, pop princess Taylor Swift. Mm-hmm. She'd been there for a couple of weeks, and all the fans started getting really weirded out because they were like, who are Tool? Never heard of this band called Tool. What is happening? You know, there was talk that Tool might unseat Taylor Swift from her queenly throne. And then all the Tool fans piled on trying to explain to the Taylor Swift fans who Tool were. And the fact they hadn't had a record for 13 years. And then the Taylor Swift fans were like, I don't care if it's been 13 years. Taylor's worked really hard to get to number one. Who at all to come along and knock her off the top spot? So it was kind of, it reminded me a bit of those old school, like, radio battles you'd have when we were kids between, like, Blur and Oasis or something. It's kind of this old school clash of the Taylor Swift fans and the Tool fans. And in the end, Tool beats Taylor Swift to the top spot, which is a pretty amazing achievement. Obviously, is their first record in 13 years, much anticipated, but it's still a rock band / metal band / progressive band on the top of the charts, which is awesome.
Yeah, it is cool.
And in the UK, they got to number four, which was the same as 10,000 Days, their previous record. But I'm not really sure how it works in the UK, because I think I spoke last week about how I had an edition of the album that I pre-ordered from the States that came with the little TV screen in the middle. And I know a lot of people in the UK either couldn't get hold of that or didn't want to buy it necessarily because it was £80. And I don't think it was easy to get hold of. So I feel like maybe if they'd done kind of a more standard edition, maybe it would have got to number one in the UK. But number four, for having a premium product like that and relying on streaming, is still amazing. It's still an amazing chart position for a band. And to have that and Slipknot in the same year, it does feel a bit of a victory for rock and metal. So I am hyped.
Yeah, it's good.
And talking of Slipknot, their record, We Are Not Your Kind, Jim Root has said he wants to play We Are Not Your Kind in full live next year, which I am super, 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 super excited about. I really hope it happens.
we've talked about this record a lot in the podcast. Big record, number one record, really varied sounds that you can pick any song on it and find something to like. And I think, as one of you guys said online, it's one of the kind of records where one minute you have one song that's your favorite, and then a few days time you might have changed to another song because there's so much in there to get stuck into, and it feels like a proper return to form and a big statement about Slipknot, and it's very cool. And yeah, so they might play it next year in full for their 25th anniversary. He told a radio station in the States called 93.3 WMMR Rocks, and I just really want to hear it. I think it'd be amazing.
Yeah, I think it's strange though to play their new album for their 25th anniversary rather than like their old one.
They've done, they did Iowa at Knotfest in the past, so they have done records from their past. And I think Jim said that they enjoyed doing that, and it was a really cool thing to do for them and the fans. And they'd like to find a way to play the new album from the beginning to the end, and just kind of do something without a big stage show, without a big fanfare, and just play the music. So I don't know. I feel like there are no rules. Obviously, it's good to hear. It's good to hear and celebrate albums on their anniversaries, but to do something for your 25th anniversary that's celebrating your current music, I think is actually really nice. It's not kind of, it's always good to celebrate past legacies. I would never, say that anyone shouldn't do that. And I really enjoy going to those shows and reliving that. But it'd be pretty cool for a band like Slipknot, who've been around for 25 years, to actually celebrate with their current music and go, we're celebrating who we are, and this is who we are now. And, come and listen to the whole record, and doing something that was really stripped back, you can imagine would have an amazing energy to it, just playing those songs from beginning to end. I would go and watch that.
Yeah, I mean, I get your point. Good point.
You could be a bit more excited. I really hope if they do it though, I really hope they do something like that in the UK, because I feel like it's something they would end up doing at a Knotfest or in the States somewhere, and I would be really good because I wouldn't be able to go. So, I'd love to do that. And I think he did say something about streaming it as well. So maybe even if a lot of people couldn't go, we could join in online.
Yeah.
Not quite as good, but still something.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
What else is happening this week?
Francis Bean Cobain, who, by the way, is Kurt Cobain of Nirvana fame's daughter, has started creating merchandise of her late father's illustrations.
Yeah, so I wanted to talk about this because I just thought it was really interesting. It was one of those news stories that made me kind of sit up and have a think about it.
Hmm.
So the merchandise line is called Kurt Was Here, and it's basically all of Kurt's doodles and scribbles and that kind of thing. They've been put onto t-shirts and hoodies, and they're being sold, under license from his estate. So Francis Bean Cobain has curated this line to make sure it's kind of what is what's in line with what she would want for her father's legacy. And she's overseen the way the artwork is used and the way everything looks and all the rest of it. And there's some really interesting stuff on there. If you've ever seen any of his diaries or anything like that, or, his scribbles, you'll have seen the kind of things he's done. And they're basically kind of stuck all that on t-shirts. But I don't know, it's one of those really weird things where you read it, and at the time people were so critical of Nirvana and they had all the criticism of sellouts, that it seems strange from that perspective that Francis, his daughter, would be making money from his work in that way. But having said that, I'm all for it. I think, that's what he left to her. It's her artwork to do with what she wants to, and if she can make a living from his legacy and be doing it on her own terms, not being ripped off by another company or something trying to do the same thing, then totally think that's cool. And the line is really cool, so I don't have a problem with it, but I imagine it might be something that would kind of kick up a few opinions. What's your take on it?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. I think it is kind of like, yeah, capitalizing on her father's legacy, but it's not her legacy, is it? I mean, I do have like a bit of a issue with that when kids are just like, well, I'm just gonna like ride on the coattails of my daddy or mummy.
Is it riding though, or is it celebrating and getting it out there to people in a way that is, you know, a good way to do? It's out there under your own terms. It's not out there because somebody else has ripped them off, and you're kind of celebrating all his work and putting out into the world. Like, seeing it from that point of view, it definitely seems like a positive thing to do.
Yeah, no, I get you. I do get you. But I still think it's a weird one. And especially with Kurt Cobain and how he sort of like he wanted to be a rock star, but then he hated the fame that that brought. And, you know, him as a person, I guess it's a bit strange because I don't think it's something that he'd want to put out there. Like, you know, especially because it's personal, it's something that doodles of his. They're not like something to do with his band. They're a more personal thing. And he wasn't very like, he wasn't the kind of guy to go and like, you know, air all of his personal shit out there. If it was to do with the band and stuff like that, he would do it. But when it came to his personal life, he wasn't quite as like open about it. And I think that in that case, I don't know, it's kind of like, would he be happy about all of his like things being released? And I guess it's the same with how they released all of his journals and everything anyway. Like, he probably wouldn't have been okay with that. But there we go.
I don't know. It's interesting, isn't it? Because you have to kind of rely on the family to make those decisions as they control mm-hmm. the estate. And you also kind of imagine that any parent is going to want their children to be safe and secure. And if this is kind of another way of doing that and makes, you know, her happy as well, then...
I'm pretty sure she's safe and secure and rich enough.
No, I know. It's another way though, isn't it? To kind of, like I said, you're getting that out there on your own terms. And... It is financial security, you know, whatever that means, you know, for anybody.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Would you buy any of them? Have you seen them?
Yeah, I mean, they're quite, you know, they're artsy. They're that kind of like minimalist. They're quite cool, but it's just, I don't think I'd buy any of them.
Because you've got mixed feelings.
Yeah, and just because, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't think I would.
Interesting. Well, I guess in other news this week, it seems like if current trends hold, then vinyl Yay. Is set to outpace the sales of CDs for the first time since 1986. That's wow. going to happen this year if things keep going as the way they are, according to the Recording Industry Association of America. So more vinyl, less CDs.
Yes.
I know you're really stoked about that because you're very old school and you like a lot of old school things.
Yeah,
in your
but
life.
Also like CDs are kind of shitty. And if you've got like, if you've got an MP3, right, then you don't need a CD. Like I use CDs in my car because my car doesn't have any other way of playing music. So I have tons of CDs. I've got all the CDs that I had when I was growing up. I've got loads and loads and loads and loads of CDs, too many CDs. And I like them being tangible. But CDs aren't pretty. They're not something that you can keep. They're not like anything special. There's nothing artsy about them. They're just this disc that eventually goes to shit. Or you step on it by mistake and then it's just, it's fucked. So, and it's because they're so small and just plastic, they're not beautiful things. Like as much as I like a tangible thing, I'd just rather have load of stuff on streaming and on MP3 and then have vinyls because they're pretty and you can frame them and they usually have posters in them and they have like pretty colored like records and stuff like that. Even if you're not actually playing the vinyl, they're a nice tangible thing to keep. If you're going to get something when you're already streaming everything, I think it's like that's the thing that I'd want to spend the money on because it's something that's pretty and it's something that you can keep. And yeah, they're just nicer to have around, really.
Do you buy records? Cool.
Yeah, I do buy records, yeah.
What's the last one you bought?
So I've got a few that I didn't buy.
But what was the last record you bought? I've got a few that I didn't buy.
Well, so like you then you were...
You were lucky enough to be given them.
Yeah, I was given them. But but the last one that
hashtag
I actually
gifted.
Yeah, and also actually this one that I was going to say was gifted also, but it was gifted by my mother for Christmas.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So the last one that I was gifted by my mother was the Coven reissue.
Nice.
And it's signed by Jinx Dawson. And that's really, really cool. And I haven't opened it. I'm like, oh, it's so pretty. So I've got that one. And then I was gifted the new Dark Throne and the new Mork album and the new Morton one, which is really, really good. And you should check it out.
So you go home, put your vinyl on. Well, it's just like, I don't know why I'm saying vinyl. Like when I grew up, it was just called a record.
Yeah.
You go home and put your records on and you sit with your crystals around you. What are they? Dark tourmaline? And then you just kind of listen to the music.
Black tourmaline.
Black tourmaline. I'm sorry.
I've got a lot of labradorite as well.
I always thought it was labradorite, like a dog.
Labradorite. Yeah, it's from Labrador.
Is it?
Yeah. It's in Canada.
Wow.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day.
It's a dark version of Rainbow Moonstone.
Oh.
Essentially.
Interesting. All your crystal info, Alice is the girl for you. But yeah, obviously, one of the reasons why that this is happening is because people are streaming more and more. So sale of CDs are going down. So it's kind of leveling off with vinyl. And then people, like you said, kind of like having vinyl for the, you know, having an object and having something beautiful. So
there's been a lot of reissues though, like in the last few years it's really had a sort of resurgence.
Yeah,
so I think for a while CDs, like even with the streaming and stuff, like vinyl had had a massive decline, but yeah, they're like sort of evening out, I suppose, because more people are buying vinyl, less people are buying CDs, and it's just,
and it's that thing of supporting a band you love as well, isn't it? Somebody might,
yeah,
be tempted to buy a vinyl instead of a CD because they, yeah, want to give the band some money to support them, but they're just going to stream it. So it's like you said, you know, you get something anyway. But interesting times, you know, interesting times to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we do some reader questions?
Yep.
Okay. Do you want to go first?
All right. So Joe Heaton asks, given the amount of raised eyebrows at Megadeth supporting Five Finger Death Punch, what are some of the strangest or unlikeliest touring packages you've seen?
Well, I really struggle with this one, and I'm a massive failure because I failed to come up with a metal answer. But I asked my colleague Fraser, and he's the online editor at Classic Rock, and he gave me a really funny answer that I wanted to share. He said he once saw the German experimental group, okay, deep breath, Einstürzende Neubauten, really hard to say, with Shwoddy Woddy, who were a 1950s revival song band. They did like Under the Moon of Love and stuff. So he saw a German experimental group with a British 50s cover group at a venue called the Kilburn National in 1987. I wish I'd been there because it sounds pretty,
yeah,
crazy.
Pretty cool.
And Fraser was really good at, you know, just listening to and going to random and obscure things. And it does not surprise me that he went to a show like that with two completely different bands. But I'm going to have to come back to this like next week or something because I really struggled.
It is a really difficult one.
Do you have any, Alice?
So I got a few, but they're not like super, super crazy. But like, I find it quite surprising that Behemoth are on tour with Slipknot. I think that's
really
a bit weird.
I don't find that weird at all.
I think it's quite weird.
Why do you think it's weird?
Musically, it's quite weird.
Like, expand.
They're very different. Like, Behemoth are like death black metal. And like, their background is in like black metal, and they've always been like, they've got bigger now, but they're always, you know, more of an underground band. And like Slipknot are just like one of the biggest metal bands of the last 20 years.
I see everything as kind of the same as a, like the same part of a whole though, I guess, because Slipknot are obviously a huge, massive band, but they are still a heavy band. You know, like we said before, if you listen to something like Solway Firth off the last record, like they still understand what extreme metal is, even though they're not an extreme metal band. But you
I
know,
wouldn't
they,
compare
they
that to
I'm not saying they're an extreme metal band, do not twist my words. I'm saying they understand extreme metal. I'm not saying they play extreme metal. I'm saying they understand extreme metal.
I still think it's strange,
and I think that Behemoth have grown in the last few years to become much more of a mainstream band and much less of an underground band. So I feel like there's a bit in the middle where they meet, and people now who like Slipknot will probably like Behemoth because they've become more accessible, and people who like Behemoth may like Slipknot. I feel like there's more in common now than there has been before, and that we're in a world where people are open to liking stuff that is from the same family, even if it's not the same music.
Yeah, I get like that. Well, they're both metal bands, but it's just, they're just a strange two metal bands to be together, I feel.
But I kind of think as well, if you're somebody who has criticized Slipknot in the past few years for like not making another Iowa or something, you might be like, hey, cool, Behemoth are on the tour. I like them. They're a bit, you know, more extreme. That kind of makes it worthwhile going. And if you're a Slipknot fan, hang on, I've lost my train of thought. If you're a Behemoth fan, you know, maybe you like what Slipknot are doing now, and it's, you know, you recognize that the bands you like in Behemoth are becoming kind of more mainstream prospects. I don't know, I just kind of think it feels like it goes together for me.
That's fair. And that wasn't even my weirdest one. Who else did I have? Okay, so Rotten Christ is supporting Moonspell. I think that's a bit weird.
It's a little bit weird. What do we think about that? Again, though, Rotten Christ are less underground now, and I would say easier to get into.
But like Moonspell.
I mean, yeah, I don't really know who you'd put Moonspell with.
No, probably, but I wouldn't have put them with Rotten Christ. Just, it's a bit weird to me. Also, I once saw the Killing Joke support Motley Crue.
Killing Joke and Motley Crue?
Yeah.
Are you serious? Where was this?
2006.
Killing Joke and Motley Crue.
Yeah.
That's very weird, isn't it?
It was weird, yeah.
British apocalyptic industrial, like crazy conspiracy theorist, amazing band with like, I don't know.
80s hair metal.
Yeah, like just 80s hair metal. And yeah. Group, everything that goes along with that, like just sex and drugs and groupies, and
yeah,
that's a really weird combination.
Yeah, it was.
What kind of a venue was it? An arena show?
Yeah.
How weird.
It was when they'd just done that Red, White and Crew and they'd like reunited or whatever.
So
it was
weird. Yeah. Well, that was a really good answer, because I would not have put them together. What would Jazz Coleman and like Vince Neil and Nikki Six talk about?
I don't know, I just think they'd pie.
I mean, I imagine that like Jazz has got a very interesting mind and is open to creative experiences. And Motley Crue traditionally like drinking drugs. I think half of them might be sober now, probably all of them, so I don't know. Would like to be a fly on the wall backstage at that show.
Yeah, be weird.
Well, we have a question from Alex Ginge Knight. Hi, Ginge. He says, after last week's podcast with the talking about Post Malone and Ozzy collaboration, do you think it was a quick cash grab from Ozzy as he didn't really put much difference into the song like I was hoping for? What are all of your thoughts?
Yeah, so I don't think it was really a collaboration.
Yeah.
It was just him guesting or guest vocals on a Post Malone song.
It definitely felt like somebody gave him the words and he sang them, and then that was kind of it, and that was over. Obviously the record came out on Friday, if you haven't heard it, the Post Malone record, and it was called Hollywood's Bleeding, and the song featuring Ozzy Osbourne and Travis Scott is called Take What You Want. And Ozzy opens the song and it's so distinctive and so Ozzy. And we were kind of wondering last week, is he going to rap? Is he going to do something like super weird that's a departure? But no, it sounds like Ozzy singing a quiet bit on a fairly standard Ozzy song. It, you know, it doesn't sound really any different. And then it kind of segues into being a Post Malone song. So it doesn't really feel like the two styles were blended so much as Ozzy kind of sang a bit that sounded like Ozzy and then the song happened. I don't know. You're like, I don't love it, I'll be honest. I think it's interesting, but I definitely think it had more scope to be completely what the fuck, and it wasn't really what the fuck. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
What did you think when you heard it?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think it would be anything crazy. I don't know.
I hoped it would be crazy. I hoped it would like blow my mind.
It was just still going to just be beige Post Malone rubbish, wasn't it?
I don't know. It could have been something amazing. I like to be optimistic and have my mind open. I'm not cynical like you, Alice.
I have an open mind. I just know that it's very unlikely that Post Malone's going to blow it.
You never know. You never know. But he did an interview, Post Malone did an interview with Zane Lowe. And apparently he said that Ozzy was well into the collaboration. Post Malone says, I was in Utah because I just got off tour. Ozzy went over to producer Andrew Watts's house and he said, hey, you know what? Ozzy Osbourne's coming down. We're going to cut it and I'll FaceTime you and you let me know what's going on. So we talked and it was a big fucking deal. Ozzy Osbourne. And then Post Malone also says, I think he crushed it. And he was telling the producer, this is my favourite shit I've done since Sabbath, since I started my own way. And Post Malone said he was honoured. So yeah, Ozzy seems really stoked on it, apparently. He was like well into it. And it must be pretty cool as well if you're Ozzy to have had this insane career where you start, you know, this massive legendary band. You have that weird period in the middle of doing Osbournes and having like massive mainstream fame. And now you're guesting on a song of a huge mainstream artist in 2019. Like, what an interesting life Ozzy Osbourne's had, to say the least. It feels like a massive understatement. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't say it was a cash grab from Ozzy necessarily, because I don't think he really needs to do that. I'd just say it was a little bit uninspiring.
Yeah, it was meh.
Do you want to take the next question, Alice?
Okay, so do you have any favourite venues? I haven't been to many, but Brixton Academy was really cool. I was right at the front for Gojira, so I'm definitely biased. Forgot about the Albert Hall as well. That's not bad. Says Crazy Platypus.
Well, Crazy Platypus, I agree with you. I was right. Well, I was going to say I was right at the front for Gojira. I was right at the front of the seating for Gojira at Brixton Academy. But it was so fucking amazing. That band sounded incredible. It was just a show where they came out and they really obviously wanted to crush it. And there was so much power and you could feel the electricity in the air. Like, that was like one of my, that's probably my second best show of the year, because I'm sort of biased with the whole Rammstein show thing. But I just love that Gojira so hard. And yeah, I was seated for that one. But Brixton is generally my favorite venue, because once you're on the lower, like the ground floor part of it, it's sloped. And I really like the idea that you can stand wherever you want in the room and you can still see, which is great.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's really big, really airy, the stage is massive. And it's just, it always feels like a good atmosphere, because it's one of those old theatre style venues. So it's got, you know, a bit of kind of history and, you know, it feels atmospheric before anything's happened. And then when you watch bands, they've got a massive stage. You can see what's going on. And I love it. Brixton is hands down my favourite venue. But as Crazy Platypus also said, the Royal Albert Hall is pretty sweet. I think when it's an occasion gig, like, I've seen Opeth there, Devin Townsend there. It's another one of those times where you walk into the venue and you know something special is going to happen, like Bring Me With The Orchestra. It really kind of puts everyone in that mindset of it being a prestige gig. It's like a royal venue. And that's really cool as well. And I like the Roundhouse, just because it's kind of quirky.
Good sound.
Good sound. It's kind of quirky. Again, there's a few pillars, but in the main, you can kind of find somewhere to stand and you can see stuff. And it also feels like, it just feels cool and interesting. They're my favourite London venues. Yeah. What about you? You going to represent Wales or are you going to go for London?
I don't know. There's none in Wales. No good ones.
Oh.
Absolutely none.
There must be something.
There's a few in Bristol.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I like in Bristol? the O2 is rubbish. The O2 Academy. It's like awful. Awful.
Oh, no.
I like the Fleece.
Yeah.
Just because it's quite intimate and it's really cool. So I really like that venue. If something's on at the Fleece, I'm like, oh yeah, I like that place. I'll go there. what else do I like in Bristol? I can't even think now. yeah, that's going to be my only mention of Bristol then, because I can't even think of what the other venues that I go to there are. There's one that's underneath the ground, like by the station, and it's like in the... It's called the I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically what the venue is. It's like the old.
Oh, you mean like if it was an engine shed, it would be like the engine shed.
Yeah, it's like,
but it's not an engine shed.
But it's like the tunnels or something.
Okay,
it must be called Maybe it is called the tunnels. Anyway, it's underneath the station. That's pretty cool just because it's like, ooh, spooky. Yeah. There's one like that in London as well. I saw the last ever Jack of Jill show there. I can't remember what it's called. That's a bit like that.
House of Vans under the station or anything like that.
No, I can't remember what it's called though. It was years ago.
House of Vans is quite cool. That's under Waterloo Station. And okay. It's got that like tunnel shape to it where like all the rooms have the curved ceilings.
Yeah. Like, it's like all these old tunnels. And there's loads of them in Bath as well. There's quite a few around there. And the train stations, they're all these old tunnels. And in Bath, they've turned quite a few of them into restaurants.
Yeah.
So you go in and it's just this big. It's really cool. But yeah, I think they make quite cool venues. I like quirky venues. I really like the Underworld.
Mm.
I just think that it works really well. Like once you're in there,
underground. Well, it's not. I don't know. It is underground, isn't it?
It is, but it's not. Yeah. So yeah, I like that just because I mean the toilets are disgusting. They really need to sort that out. But when you're actually in, the venue, it's and like in front of the stage, it's just it's intimate, but it's big enough that you can get enough people in there. But it doesn't feel like you're ages and ages away from the stage or the band, which is quite good. It sucks a bit if it's completely
rammed.
Like, yeah.
You cannot get down onto the floor and then you can't see over the balcony.
Yeah, that sucks. Like when it's way too packed. But yeah. Oh, there's a phone going. And
is it
messing.
Mine?
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
But it's messing with the
you need to bring your crystals to diffuse the phone energy.
I like the Underworld. I like the Roundhouse because the sound is amazing. And it's just really fun. Like if there's a really like fun band there, like something you can dance to, it's like it's really spacey and I really like that. And I guess like as a venue, I quite like the Electric Ballroom, but I really, I quite like it.
Why?
I don't know, because you can go upstairs and you can see, or then you can go downstairs and you get right to the front. And I don't know, there's no big pillars in your way. And I find that a massive issue with a lot of venues.
Yeah.
There's stuff in your way and you just want to see the stage and there's always things in your way. And you can stand by the bar in Electric Ballroom and still see the stage and just be like, I'll have another drink now.
That is true. I'm not a huge fan, I have to say. I think it works much better as a venue, like a club night venue. I think it doesn't work that well as a gig venue, but at least we have it because it's kind of that middle capacity size that means bands can come through and have a place to play. So I wouldn't like want it to not be there, but it's not my favourite.
I quite like it.
So London-centric, guys. Write in and tell us your favourite venues.
Yeah.
I'm from Manchester, but it's been a while since I've been back to see a show there. I think the last time probably would have been at the Academy. And yeah, the Academy's cool, but I haven't got anything particularly interesting to say about it. Well, Stone Cold Ads has a question. Cold Ads. See what he did there.
Yeah.
He says, why do promoters seem to have a tendency to want to book the UK just after Christmas? Because I'm already seeing Slipknot, Sabaton and Ozzy within 21 days, I can't see Five Finger Death Punch and Megadeth. That really sucks. I'm really sorry, Stone Cold Ads. That really sucks. There's just too many good bands in a short space of time, basically.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not a scientist or a promoter. My answer to this would be, usually there are tons of bands touring in the summer. They're doing the festival circuit. So you get bands going all around there, playing all over Europe and the States. And generally, bands aren't allowed to announce tours when they're booked for festivals because the promoters of the festivals want people to buy a ticket and go out and see the band. And if they know that band are going on tour, it might jeopardize the chance of somebody buying a ticket for the band they like.
Mm-hmm.
So after a festival like Download in the UK or Bloodstock, there are usually a ton of tour announcements during the festival weekend or just after, saying, hey, you know, you like this band, they played this festival, now go and see them. And it seems to be that the timing is once bands have come off that festival circuit, they maybe have a short break or do another tour. And then the winter is kind of used for touring as well, like to continue the cycle. So it kind of seems like we get quite a lot of gigs in the run up to Christmas and yeah. just after Christmas as well, because it's in that zone just a few months after the summer touring festival and then a few months before it begins. So it kind of just seems to fit into those gaps. I don't know with metal as well whether there are economic reasons, because the period at the beginning of the year tends to be quite quiet. Often bands, metal bands, play gigs on Sundays because I'm guessing that is the cheaper night to play if you're hiring a venue. And I don't know whether there's a similar thing about the beginning of the year, like it's a bit quieter and, you know, metal bands can get people in. But I'm literally speculating because I have no idea and it is not my area. But I would say like the post-festival season has a massive knock-on effect with when bands actually go and do their own tours.
Yeah, I mean, I always find it, the run-up to Christmas is always super, mad. Super, super packed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like there's like mini festivals or festivals running up to it as well. And then it's like around Easter time that I find loads and loads of bands seem to be around or
crop
little
back
festivals.
Up again. Yeah,
and I like, stuff like
it
that.
Does seem to be kind of like run up to Christmas and then you've got a bit of January, February action and then you're kind of kicking off for the summer. But yeah, I mean, we have got Slipknot, Sabaton, Ozzy, Five Finger Death Punch, and Megadeth. So it's going to be a pretty metal winter. And, you know, Stone Cold adds, I'm sorry you can't see Five Finger and Megadeth, but at least you've got Slipknot, Sabaton and Ozzy. So that's a good winter.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know. Maybe Santa will be able to help you out with the other two gigs. well, the other gig with the two bands in. You could ask Santa.
Yeah, you never know. He might be kind. He might take pity on you.
Might be a metal Santa. And instead of leaving a lump of coal because you've been a terrible human, you might leave some tickets.
Yes.
It's worth asking.
It is.
We've got one more question. Alice, do you want to do it?
I suppose so.
You know you want to.
Franek Daluski?
Danielski? Franek Danielski? I'm going to
okay.
go with that. I don't
All right.
know. You,
All right.
you go with it.
All right. Well, yeah. Sorry, Franek. We don't know how to say your name. Have you ever felt sexually attracted to a song or album?
What an interesting question.
Yeah.
Alice, have you ever felt sexually attracted to
a
song or album?
I mean, like, just, I have so many questions back. So many questions.
Well, it's quite interesting, you know, because does he mean the physical
album? like the actual album? Yeah. Like, wow, this
or
album is sexy. That album artwork, wow.
I know, right? Well, actually, I used to work for another magazine back in the day called Bazaar, and we did a piece on a woman who fell in love with the Berlin Wall.
Well, this is what I'm thinking.
She married
Yeah, do you mean the actual physical copy?
Because that's a real condition called objectum sexuality.
Yeah.
So you can actually fall in love with objects and like want to marry them and be in a relationship with them. That's a real psychological condition.
Yeah.
So, you know, that Coven album vinyl you're talking about.
I mean, I was pretty attracted to
perhaps
that.
Perhaps you'd want to marry it.
I mean, maybe, perhaps. I don't know if it's the same as being sexually attracted to it, though. I mean, maybe if it was an album cover with a really hot guy on it.
Yeah, that could work.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
Or is it just the music that you mean? Like, when you're listening to it, is it like Barry White? Is it like some kind of like oyster of music?
I don't know, it's sexually attracted to a song or album. So it's like, do you want to have sex with the song or the album? Or does that make you
right.
want to have sex with a person? That's another question.
Yeah. See, I'm still confused by this question.
I think we just have to take it as our own interpretation.
Right.
I'm not going to lie. The first time I heard Accelerated Evolution by Devin Townsend, I was like, this album is incredible. I want to have sex with the person who created this. And I didn't know anything about what it was. And
But that's the person that created it, and that's the music. So it's inspired this kind of lust, this kind of attraction.
But I had no idea where this music came from or who had made it. I just heard this music and was like, fucking hell, fuck me, this music is good.
Yeah, but then
it was a blank
but
slate,
that's kind of like the same know. Thing when you're like, this guy's kind of ugly, but then they get on stage and then they're like amazing, and you're like, I'm suddenly like, actually, he's not ugly, but it kind of happened to me with, you know, Ina from Wardruna. Like,
what are we
honestly,
going into here?
Like,
he's ugly man. He's a
lovely beautiful man.
Man,
right? Anyway, but like his voice on stage, like I like it on album anyway. But when I saw him do it live, I was just like, I want to marry him. I'm in love with this guy now. So it's that kind of thing. It's kind of like, you know, they've got a sheer talent or just like charisma about them.
Some people do have so much charisma.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, that kind of, someone could be quite unassuming in real life and then they can step on stage and be,
yeah, exactly,
you know, transform into more of an act, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think about Accelerated Evolution as well. When I heard that, I wasn't even thinking about any of the content of the songs, and the content of the songs is like quite emotionally wrought and like difficult, but I was just like, this music sounds so good, because I hadn't really heard anything like it. So it was just one of those things where you're sort of swept away by it. So I don't know, there's different layers here, different shades of grey.
It's way too complex to answer in one podcast.
Yeah,
we'd have to pick it apart. We'd have to pick this apart. We'd have to analyse it. We'd have to have like 3-hour show.
Yeah. We're going to have to keep thinking on this one, Franek, because we're not really sure how we feel about it.
No.
But it's an interesting question. And if I come into the office early one morning and find Alice in a compromising position with a record, it's going to be a weird day.
I don't think it's going to happen. I mean, I get very excited with certain new albums out, and, you know, if I get one delivered to me. But I don't know if it's sexual.
I thought you were going to say it's not going to happen because I'm always late.
Also that.
We should probably wrap
but
it up.
But you're
also
always late.
I am. We're both terrible
humans. So it could happen to either of us.
Well, yeah, we should probably leave it there. But send us more questions. We need more things to, you know, blow our minds and keep us on our toes. But definitely come back next week. I'm actually not here next week, but Alice will be here. I know, you can cry for me later. Alice will be here and Merlin will be back next week. And he is currently in San Francisco and he's going to be coming back and reviewing S&M2 and Iron Maiden in San Francisco. So get ready to sit back, settle in and hear about that, because
yes,
I think he's
metal tour of the USA
to say about those two gigs. If you followed him on Instagram or Twitter, I think he's put a few little updates on there. Also, just a reminder to go out and buy Metal Hammer with Baby Metal on the cover. Honestly, it's just a crazy journey through their metal galaxy and everything that they've been through. We've got that exclusive patch that comes with it of the Fox God in corpse paint. We've got the art print of the Fox God as a constellation. We've got all those other things we talked about. Korn, Steel Panther, Cult of Luna, Opeth, Motorhead, Slipknot, Cradle of Filth, Baroness, Soundgarden, all those bands and more in the massive new issue of Metal Hammer. So go out there, tinyurl.com/buyhammer, or go into a shop and, you know, do it old school.
Indeed. I like the old school ways.
That is it for next week.
Yes.
See you later.
Bye.